Welcome to The Edge, a podcast by Tag Heuer. Our guest this time is kitesurfer Gisela Pulido. In 2004, Gisela became the sport's youngest world champion at age 10. Since then, she has won multiple world titles and accolades. In this episode, we speak to Gisela about one of the most defining moments of her career, the European Championships in 2023. She also tells us about what it takes to become an elite athlete, performing under high pressure, overcoming injuries, and preparing for a big year ahead. I'm your host, Naomi Schiff, and this is The Edge, a podcast by Tag Heuer. Well, Gisela, thank you so much for joining us on The Edge podcast today. I'm really looking forward to speaking with you because we get a lot of guests on this podcast, and whilst they are all great, it's so great to speak to a badass woman. So thank you for being here today. And yeah, I can't wait to get into your story. But before we do that, where in the world are you right now?
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm super excited. And yeah, right now I'm in Marseille. Sailing is not going to be in Paris, obviously, because there's no ocean. So we are going to be based in Marseille. So this is where we spend most of the time. So like we spend here time to train and stuff.
Fantastic. Now, this segues me onto the perfect question, which, you know, you've done a lot of incredible things throughout your career, and we'll touch on that in a little bit. But I want to understand where your love for kitesurfing comes from.
So I think I started flying kites when I was about 6 years old or something, because my dad always taught me every sport that he knew. So like snowboarding, surfing, wakeboarding, biking, climbing. Like my dad was always like really fan into like so many sports. So he taught me everything he knew, but kitesurfing was forbidden. So it was like, you're not allowed to kite because it's so dangerous. So yeah, that's why I started flying kites with 6 years old. I did my own kites. Obviously, they were not flying very well, so then my dad saw me and he got me a kite. And I think I stayed about 2 years flying kites without going on the water. And then finally, he let me go on the water, and then I started kiting, and I couldn't get off my hands. Like, I was kiting every day. I loved it.
Wow, 6 years old. That's so young. I mean, I'm still terrified of the ocean today. So I don't know, you must have been a really brave little girl. But tell me, where did you grow up?
So originally, I'm from Barcelona. I was born there and I grew up there until I was 10 years old. But then I moved to Tarifa, to the south of Spain. So like, we moved there because of the sport, because in Barcelona, there was no wind, basically. So I couldn't perform my sport. And also like the school was in the morning and in the afternoon. And in Tarifa, in the south of Spain, as I said before, the school was only in the morning, so until 3 p.m. So then I could have like the whole afternoon to train. So I moved there with my dad. And yeah, so I've been living in Tarifa for the past 20 years, already 30. So yeah, past 20 years.
Gosh, I'm jealous.
Yeah, it's the best place ever.
I mean, I've seen it from a distance, but I definitely want to visit. And yeah. Maybe now that I have a friend there, I will come and visit you.
You're invited. Whenever you want to try kitesurfing, you can come and join us.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Well, you became a world champion at the age of 10 years old, which is just so incredible. But what kind of role did this play on your career? I mean, how does it feel to be a world champion at 10 as opposed to 20, 25? And was it different?
I guess when I was a kid, I didn't realize what I was doing. So as I told you before, I started doing sport at a very early age, and I started competing in swimming as well. So like, I was very linked to the competition. I've been always super competitive. So when I started kiting, it felt natural for me to start competing as well. And I convinced my dad to bring me to like the European Championships and like the Junior Championships so I could participate. And for me, it was just like so awesome to be in the competition, because I always love sport, but I love sport because it's a competition of like competing against yourself and competing against other people. So it just felt natural for me. And when I started kiting, I told my dad, okay, I want to be professional at this sport and compete. And when I won the first championship, it was a bit of like a surprise for both of us, because we were following the tour, like the world tour, and trying to do as good as possible. And at the end of the year, I realized I had a chance to be the world champion. And And then I made it happen in 2004. So yeah, I was really excited about it. But like, I didn't realize, you know, like when you're a kid, you're like really just having fun and you don't think about what you do. You just enjoy the water. And I just wanted to spend so much time on the water, always.
I can imagine that looking back on it now, it probably seems much more crazy now than it did then. But you've gone on to do that 9 more times after that. So you are obviously somewhat of a sensation of a kite surfer. So I'd love to get your take on what you think it takes to be a professional kite surfer.
I think you need to, like, to be an athlete, like, it doesn't matter kite surfer or whatever sport, you need to have a few things that we all have in common, I would say, right? For sure, you need to be very disciplined. You need to have some kind of capacities to be able to sacrifice a few things that you do in your life, to be like, to have a good physical, of course. But this is something you can train and you can get. You need for sure to have a really good team around you to support you and to get to the maximum level. That's for sure as well. But I think one of the most important things is the mental part, I would say, right? I know so many good athletes that they're so good. Outside of the competition, they perform so good. But then once they are competing, they get stressed, they get nervous. They don't handle the pressure so well. So then they never get like the results they would like. I guess they have like a really good technical level, but they never get there because they cannot manage the pressure or they don't like to compete. So you need to have so many things, but for sure the mental part is key.
And I think you were even caught in an interview saying that had your mental state not been where it was, you probably wouldn't have achieved what you had. Why do you think it plays quite the role that you say it does?
I think you just need to have the right mental setup, I would say, to be able to face the competition, because everyone is at the maximum level. Like, you're training so hard, but your competitor is training as hard as you, and everyone is in the maximum level. And at the end, what makes the difference is your capacity to don't crack under pressure, I would say, right? You have, when I was competing in freestyle, I had 7 minutes, and in those 7 minutes, you need to perform your best tricks. But it has to be done right now. So, you know, like, it's not like you do it whenever you want in a nice environment, when you're training, when nobody's watching. No, you have to do it on those 7 minutes when everybody's watching you. You have the pressure against, like, yourself, the competitors, everyone, the conditions. So, you know, like, I think that's really, really important for sure.
Just to go a little bit deeper into that topic, what training techniques would you use to prepare yourself mentally for a big event?
I work a lot with a psychologist right now, because what I'm doing now is a bit different than what I was doing before. Before I was doing freestyle, now I'm doing racing, which is, well, you know more about racing now. And I think the psychologist, for me, it makes a huge difference, because sometimes you're training so much that you get a bit demotivated, or you get a bit frustrated because you're not getting the results you aiming for. And then you get to a competition and you're tired, you're mentally tired, you know. And this person for me helps me a lot to get my setup right, you know, to go motivated to a competition, to think about the competition as an award. Let's say, like, you're training so hard and you finally get to that moment where you're competing and you're showing everyone what you've been doing the whole winter, for example, right? And for me, like, it's an award. It's like, I cannot wait till the first day of the competition starts, and I just gonna have so much fun. And I always try to go with that mental setup. I think for me, it's ideal to enjoy the moment, to enjoy the race, and to enjoy what I do, right?
Absolutely. I'm really happy you said that, because I remember at least when I was still racing that using a sports psychologist really, really helped me a lot. And I know that there's still so many taboos around seeing a psychologist in so many different environments, so many different cultures. And I think it's great that we speak about these kinds of things, because it's just great. It's like giving your mind a massage, isn't it?
It's the same. And for me, like, it helps me to analyze myself, because you, like, sometimes you're in like this routine where you go to the gym, you go to the water, you go to sleep, you go to the gym, you go to the water, you go to sleep. You're training and you don't think about how you're feeling, how are you doing in your, like, you know, in, like, inside of you, like, you know, because you just don't have time to think about yourself anymore. I even have in my phone an alarm every day to give myself 10 minutes to think about how I am every single day of my life. Because sometimes we are just so, you know, like, okay, we have this date, the Olympics are coming. So you're like full on training and you don't stop for a minute, you know, to talk about with someone for sure, like a psychologist or even with your friend, whatever, you know, to talk about how you feel, how are you doing, and if you're not excited, if you're excited, if you're motivated, if you're tired, to give you a break, you know, like all those kinds of things that you need to, for sure, analyze.
That's such a smart technique. I'm going to take that little bit of advice. I'm going to be starting to set a 10-minute alarm every day for a little bit of mindfulness. So thank you for that.
It's good. It's good.
Bit of advice. Now, would you say there are any techniques or training techniques that are really specific to kitesurfing that you would say isn't really typical in other sports?
I think I wouldn't say there's like a different technique. I think everyone has its own technique, I would say. And for me, what it works a lot is in the morning, I do my mobility and stretching always before breakfast. Then I have a coffee and a good breakfast. And then I go to the beach or to the club where we're going to do the race. And then I do my routine of preparation, my gear with the music. For me, that's like super, super important to have a good song that triggers me, you know, that thing that, okay, today I have to go full power, no mercy, full on, you know. So the music for me makes it really, really important as well. So yeah, but I guess everyone has its own procedure before the competition and everyone has its own routine.
Totally. Now, talking about procedures before competition, can you tell us a little bit about your lead up to the European Championships in 2023?
I think it was one of the most difficult competitions for me because we just did the World Championships in August and I didn't qualify the country there because it was a tough event for me. I had a lot of things happening and I didn't qualify. So right after, like I think it was 2 weeks after, we have the European Championship and only one spot given to the Olympics, because how sailing works is that only one per country goes to the Olympics and you need to qualify your country. So they gave 8 spots in the Worlds and one more spot was given in the European. So it was like coming from a bad event with a bad mindset after 2 weeks going to the European Championships where I had to qualify and where I had to fight with so many other girls that wanted to have the spot as well. So it was tough. It was really tough because I also got sick the week before the Europeans. I got a flu, and I think after a big important competition, always your immune system goes down. So I got sick after the Worlds. So it just kept, you know, I was kept dragging this flu, and I was with a high fever, and I couldn't really train the week before. So I said, okay, I'm just gonna go for it, you know, like full power. Doesn't matter if I didn't train, like I'm not going to learn anything new in 1 week. So I'm good at this. So I'm just going to go. And I have to say, like, the first day of competition was not great, but my goal was to be in the top 10, because the top 10, they have like a different competition. The last day is like a middle series. So I got to the top 10 and I said, okay, this is now or never. So yeah, I guess I made it happen the last day. I just thought, okay, I have to win this competition. I'm just, you know, just going to go as fast as I can and push as much as I can. And it has to be now. So I kind of like, this was my mindset a bit when I was racing.
So you don't just have the pressure of having to qualify yourself, but you actually have to carry the pressure of qualifying your country. What is that like? Does that feel like a whole new set of challenges when you're in it?
It was something new for me because, of course, like I've been always doing freestyle, and changing from freestyle to racing, it was already a big challenge. And now, like the way that this works, that you have only one spot for the country, it was quite stressful, and there was like a lot of pressure. But at the same time, I really enjoy the pressure. It's something that I like, the adrenaline, you know, that the pressure gives me. You know, like you are on the limit, like, okay, you could qualify or not qualify, and you're like right here standing where you could just perform good and win it or lose it all, you know. So that's, for me, like, gives me that adrenaline that takes, I think, the best of me in that case, because every time that I'm, you could see in the previous championships in freestyle, I never won by far. I always won because it was tied with the other girl, and the last competition I made it happen. So that's, I think, that's something good that I have, that when it's tight, I always said, okay, it has to be for me. So it was a bit like this.
So you're one of those who performs best under pressure.
I think so. I like it. I like it. I mean, of course, I perform better without pressure. But when everyone is under pressure, I think I perform a bit better. Yeah.
I hear you. Okay, well, I can only imagine what that is like. But, you know, I want to understand, you talked a little bit about how important the mental side of things is. But you're going into an event like this that is so high pressure and you're dealing with all these extra things. You know, you've just faced defeat or, you've come off of a bad event. You're dealing with a flu. Where was your mental state as and how much nurturing did it require during that time?
Like, my mental was not great, but for sure my psychologist, she helped me a lot. And also sometimes you just have to listen to yourself, right? And I was sick, so I decided to stay home and the previous days of the competition, try to heal, to recover as much as I could. And I was just at home doing my mobility, my stretches, listening to some music, playing guitar, because I do, like, since then I started to play guitar and just, you know, like spending time with myself, trying to take off my flu. And then I said, okay, it's what it is. I cannot change what happened. You know, like, everyone gets sick, and after a really important competition in the world, like, of course, like, your system, your immune system is just like goes down because from so much stress and from so much effort, you just like destroyed, right? And so I said, okay, it is what it is, and I have to recover as fast as I can. And so I decided to stay home and then try to work with myself and try to relax and face the competition as good as I could.
Can you describe to me what the atmosphere was like at the event, whether that was, you know, from a spectator's point of view or even within your team and or your wider team? What was the atmosphere like?
It was a different atmosphere than I expected, because some people that were competing in the Euros, they already had their spot, so they were so relaxed. So some people were just having fun, no stress. I got my place for the Olympics, my ticket in the world, so I'm chilling. And then I saw like other girls, like Poland, Austria, Swiss. There were some others that they didn't have the spot as me, so they were all stressed. And I was just like not realizing, you know, what was going on, because I was coming out of the flu. It was the World Championships just after, so I was like a bit, you know, struggling to get myself together a bit. So I was like, okay, looks like it's gonna happen. Looks like it's now or never. So like it took me a while to get into that rhythm. But then, you know, like my team was so supportive, you know, my coach and the guy who is with me in the beach, helping me to, you know, organize the gear and stuff. And my parents, my friends, I was just so supported. And that's for sure like a key. That's what I said before. You need to have a good team around you that supports you and that keeps you motivated and happy and you know, eager to go for it, I guess.
Now, having won so many medals and titles already in your career, was this spot ever in doubt? Did you ever believe that you weren't going to achieve it? Or did you come into it knowing that that spot was yours?
In the beginning of the competition, I wasn't really sure I was going to make it, because I was feeling quite weak on the water. Of course, after being sick and, you know, like so many days without touching the water. And it was quite complicated to kite in the Europeans, because we had a lot of seaweed on the water. And the seaweed, because we ride a foil, the foil gets affected by the seaweed a lot. So it was really tricky. And I was, wow, like it's taking me a while to get into the rhythm. I felt weak. I didn't have power. Through the end of the day, I was destroyed. And I was like, wow, this is tough. But then, I don't know, my goal was, okay, top 10. And then from the top 10 is like another complete different competition. So I made it to the top 10 barely. I think I was 10th or 9th. And in top 10, there were the Austrian girl and the Polish girl. They were also fighting for the spot. And I said, I'm just going to go for it. And I'm just going to make it. I didn't doubt about myself. And I said, these two girls are not going to beat me. I just believe so much in myself that I didn't like see any other thing happening besides just me winning the spot. So, yeah, I guess sometimes if you believe so hard in yourself, that it's just going to happen somehow. I don't know.
Totally. I wouldn't underestimate the importance of self-belief, because that just ultimately gives you confidence, which is such an important element.
It is.
Now, I was going to ask you if there were any last minute hurdles or any obstacles, or if there was anything that you remember vividly not quite going your way. But I mean, between being sick and seaweed, it sounds like there was already quite a lot to deal with.
There was something that happened the last day of the competition that almost cost me to lose the spot, because I was thinking more about winning the competition itself. So I was in the semi-final and I managed to win one race. And the second race I crashed because I was fighting with the other girl, and I crashed my kite, and I was like, okay. And the Polish girl was right behind me, so I was, if she finished in front of me, she will get the spot. But I crashed my kite, but I relaunched it so fast, and I got on my board and I kept going, and I managed to go in front of the Polish girl. So if I wouldn't be able to relaunch my kite in time, probably the Polish girl would have qualified. So it was not smart, I have to say. It was not smart. I was just thinking, I have to beat this girl in front of me. And because of that, I crashed and I almost lost the qualification. So it was not smart at all. But I was just so like, no, I need to win. You know, this mindset. Luckily, I got it.
Wow, so it really did come all down to the wire. It wasn't all straight cut and easy. Now,
no,
you have to describe to me what it felt like when you finally secured the spot. What was going through your mind? And did it feel different to any of your other victories?
It felt big because, I mean, it's the Olympics, right? It's my dream. It's like, I was dreaming of going to the Olympics since I was, I don't know, 6-7 years old, like since I know that the Olympics exist. So like when I crossed the finish line and I said, okay, I got it. I was like, I didn't realize, you know, it was like, no, this is not true. This is not true. This is a joke. It's like, it took me a while to accept it until I went home after the whole day, like packing, media, everything. And I went on the shower and I opened the water and the water starts falling in my head. And I'm, you know, like in the shower, and then I celebrate, you know, then is when I was like, okay, I got it. That was the moment I said, okay, it's mine.
Wow. It's giving me goosebumps listening to that. That's amazing. And I can still see the joy coming out of you now. Is there one memory that really stands out from the day?
I think the thing I have in my head is like when I crash and I look back and I saw the Polish girl coming to me, I was like, oh my God, I mean, it can't be happening. So I was like, okay, I just have to get up quickly and go. And that thing is like a flashback. You know, I have it in my mind so many times because it's a mistake I did that at the same time, I'm really happy that it happened there. So I'm not going to do it again. I'm not going to, you know, like do the same mistake. So it's something that it's staying already in my head for a while. And yeah, something I think about it. Yeah.
I can totally understand because it could have, you could have lost that position in just one split second. So kind of, I can imagine how that memory haunts you a little bit. But let's move on from the European Championship now and let's continue to talk about the rest of your career. Is there any specific moment in your career that you remember being a big challenge or a difficult moment during a competition? And can you describe how you approached that moment?
I think the most difficult, I would say, thing for an athlete is when you get injured. I've suffered many injuries during my career, and I think the hardest one was when I broke the ligament of my leg and I had to stop competing for a while. And then I came too early to the competition because I wanted to secure my world title, and I made it worse. I needed to kite with a damaged knee, and it was painful. So I said, okay, sometimes you need to, you know, like pull the brake and say, okay, it's your health, it's your knee. And you know, like it's hard for an athlete because what you want to do is just be at the competition and of course win another world title. And of course, you know, be at the top, and you're like pushing yourself so much because sometimes the athlete pushes more you push more yourself than anyone else, right? So you like, no, I just want to be here and not home resting, you know. So it took me a while to figure out, but then I just stayed home. I healed. I worked my legs and my knees, and I came back stronger. So I think that was like really, really important. But through the years, I had many injuries, but I guess that one was like the biggest one that kept me almost a year away from the sport, from kiting and competing. So that was tough for sure.
When you take into consideration all the elements that go into being an elite athlete, whether that's the time away from home, the amount of sacrifice and dedication that goes into it, injury, whatever it may be, when you've won 10 world titles, what keeps pushing you to go for more titles and for more medals?
I think all the sacrifices that we do, you know, like the reward is so big that the sacrifices end up being so small, right? And I always say, like, nobody is pushing you to do what you do. I mean, then you cannot complain, right? The sacrifices are part of the game, and you need just to go through them. And yeah, I guess I'm just so competitive, and especially with myself, I just want to improve a little bit every day. You know, I'm not aiming for a lot, just a little bit every day, because the day is long. The year has 365 days, so every day a little bit, you know, like steady, and then you just like end up with like a really good result. So that's, I guess, is how I see things. And I just, for me, like the feeling of being number one is just the best. So yeah, I guess that's what's keeping me motivated all the time, winning, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask what you think. Is it your inner competitor that keeps you driven, who that keeps you motivated to keep evolving and changing? Or would you say there's other things as well?
For sure, that inner motivation I have, and being so competitive. And one of the things I really like is getting out of my comfort zone. Like, for example, now from like changing from freestyle to racing, which is totally a different sport, that I had to change everything, like the gear I ride, the way I compete, because it's speed, not freestyle anymore. My body, I had to gain 12 kilos to be able to perform a bit better, even though I'm far away from the girls that are winning right now, because they're like 85, 90 kilos. So it's a big challenge, you know, and getting out of my comfort zone is what's keeping me alive, I would say. You know, it's like, it's what gives me the adrenaline, gives me the motivation to, not knowing what will happen, not knowing if I'm gonna get a medal or not. You know, it's like the fine line where you don't know things and you're like excited about, you know, the unknown, I would say. Yeah, I like that feeling.
Yeah, totally. And I think there's a lesson in that for so many people to learn, because some people are just so afraid to step outside of their comfort zone. But I think for those who have stepped out of their comfort zone, you realize that it's where you want to live in the end. It's where you want to stay. And actually, you keep seeking that next adrenaline hit that being outside of your comfort zone gives you. Is there anything you didn't expect to learn in your career?
I learned so many things. I think you learn more from failure or not achieving what you want, then I think I learned in those 3-4 years more than I learned the past 12-13 years competing in freestyle, because I was winning when I was in freestyle. I was winning every year, really close, really tight, but I was winning. So I was happy about, like, I was happy about my performance, I was happy about my result, so I was enjoying life in a way that, okay, I'm the best, so I don't have to think about being the best. I am already. So it's like you get a bit more relaxed, right? And now through these 4 years, I went through a lot of ups and downs, you know, from being number one in freestyle and now being number 13th in the world in the last championship. It's a big thing for me. It's been really tough because I'm so competitive and I want to be the best. And right now I'm far from being the best, you know, like I don't have the weight. I'm missing 20 kilos. I'm still learning so many things from racing that I don't know, because I'm coming from freestyle, you know. So those challenges made me work a lot with myself, you know, because you need to push even if you're not the best, and it's hard. It's so easy when you're number one and you're like so good, and you know, and no one is not even close to you, and then now you're fighting to be like in the top 10. Now you're fighting to qualify your country. Now you're fighting, you know, and you're far from being in the podium. It's tough. It's tough. At least for me, it was like the one of the hardest things in these 4 or 5 years.
So, sorry, I have to pick you up on this, because you're saying that you're missing 20 kilos. Does that mean you need to be 20 kilos heavier?
I wish I was, only for like a week, and then I could just not have 20 kilos. But it's really hard for me to gain 20 kilos.
And what advantage does being 20 kilos heavier give you?
It's so what we do with the foil right now, it's speed, right? So the heavier you are on top of the board, the more pressure you give on the foil and the more speed you get. So it's been like through the years a big, like, I don't know how to say, like, you can see all the athletes are gaining weight because they go faster, And there's a Swiss girl, she's 95 kilos. The French girl, she's the world champion, she's 85. Since I started, I gained 12 kilos. I was 52, now I'm 64 today. So it's a big change, but still really far from the top. And I'm the only girl in the top 10 fleet with that weight. All of them are 70 plus. So I know like I'm doing good, but of course I would like to be at the top. But then I know like, okay, I don't have the weight. So it's a bit, you know, it's been a bit of a struggle this few years, you know, with gaining weight. You don't like how you look because you gain weight. But at the same time, you don't get the result. So then you don't like what you see in the competition because you don't get the result. And then it's like, you know, it's like complicated.
Yeah, I can totally understand. I mean, in most of sport, obviously being as light as you can be is where the advantage lies. But having been a female racing driver, I often had to sacrifice strength for weight. And that's also such a difficult position because there's always a trade-off, right? Like you say, if you gain weight, you're not necessarily happy with what your body looks like, but then you're not happy with the results. So it's a constant battle. So I completely understand what you're saying. But obviously ours, it was the complete opposite. So I probably would have liked what I looked like if I lost weight. I just wouldn't have been strong enough. So I want to know, would you say there's any standout moments in your career, like moments where you would say that felt really transformative or unforgettable?
When I stopped competing in freestyle after the 10th world title, I took a bit of a break. I felt like I needed to stop competing for a while, and I did some other challenges, and one of them was to kite with bigger waves. And I went to Fiji to surf Cloudbreak, and I went to Hawaii to Maui and surfed Jaws, and I spent so much time with Kai Lenny, and that was so nice. I wish now that I'm doing this, I wish I had more time, free time to do this again. It was definitely one of the best moments of my life, because being away from the competition also made me miss the competition, you know. So because I was doing the same thing for the past 12, 13 years, I was like, okay, I need a break. And then I started missing the competition again. And that's what motivated me to start the campaign. So, you know, it's all a balance, right? You cannot be just pushing so much, like all the time. You need a break and regain that motivation. So for me, those 3-4 years that I had a break from competition were, I think, the best 3 years of my life. I had so much time for myself. I started surfing. I started skydiving, paragliding, climbing. I don't know, I just started so many other sports, because before I was just skiing and I didn't know how to do any other sports besides skiing. So yeah, I had time for myself, for my friends, for my family, for my dogs. So it was just so nice.
First of all, when you said Jaws and that trip, I mean, that sounds terrifying to me, but it sounds like a fantastic memory for you. But in terms of stepping outside of your environment, your immediate environment, and how much perspective that gives you, I can completely understand what you're saying.
It was awesome. It was really awesome. And I think I stayed there for so long, and you know, Jaws is something that it happens when the swell comes, so it's, you cannot predict it, right? Yeah. You're just there, and sometimes you're just, yeah, you're just like, oh, maybe tomorrow is going to happen because you see a massive swell, or maybe next week is going to happen, and then it end up being like a 2-meter wave, so okay, that was not the time, you know, so you're like waiting and waiting and waiting, and it was something so different of like what I did before as well. So, yeah, but I got to spend so much time in Hawaii, in Maui, surfing and getting to know so many cool people and preparing myself for this as well, doing a lot of freediving, a lot of training. So it was a great adventure and a great experience for sure.
Well, it sounds terrifying to me, but it sounded like it was amazing for you. I want to know, all athletes have an origin story. What was yours? Was there one more key moment you would say that made you?
I don't know. It's like what I said before, I've always been so competitive since I was a little kid. My dad taught me all the sports, and I just wanted to do all the sports as good as possible and compete in all of them. So then my dad was like, okay, you cannot compete in everything. So I started competing in swimming, and I really, really enjoyed it. And I was like really young, and I was doing the morning sessions, the afternoon sessions, competing every weekend, and I was like so focused already at a very early age. So since I was a little kid, I was very disciplined and very, you know, like I could sacrifice a lot, and I liked it, you know, I liked it because I knew like the weekend was coming, and I was like, boom, there you go, the competition finally, you know, after the whole week training. you know, is that feeling. So since I was a little kid, I had it in myself, I guess. So I think it's something you just born with it.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah. What would you say your vision for the future of kitesurfing is?
I think kitesurfing is a wonderful sport, but the time has changed so much since I was doing kitesurfing freestyle. Now, freestyle, it's not so popular anymore, and there's some other disciplines. Also, wing foiling appeared. So it's like now we have windsurfing, kitesurfing, wing foiling, we have the wave riding, we have the freestyle, we have the racing. You know, we have so many sports in one sport. So I like it. I like it because it opens, you know, the range of people who practice it. It opens, you know, like, it's so accessible at the same time that the new sports are coming. So I'm just so happy that every time we get more and more people into the sport, because at the end, it's kitesurfing, it's a really young sport. So yeah, I'm happy that I go to the beach here in Marseille and it's full of people windsurfing, full of people wing foiling, so many people kiting, and I like it, you know, that I see the future of the sport is for sure growing, and we get more people and more people into the sport.
Fantastic.
That's awesome.
Fantastic. Yeah, it sounds great. And it's lovely to hear that it is so accessible.
Yeah, it is.
You've achieved so, so, so much in your three decades. Is there anything that you still dream to achieve? Any particular dream you still have?
3 decades, it sounds like, wow. But it's actually true. I can't believe.
I just turned 30 a couple of weeks ago, so I'm feeling your pain. We're born in the same year, so I feel the same way.
Yeah.
But you've done so much in that time. I mean, it is so inspiring. But would you say there's any particular dream that you still have to achieve?
I think I'm about to achieve the dream that I was dreaming since I was a little kid in a few days. For sure, that was the biggest dream I had ever. But I have other dreams beside of sport, and as I said before, like, I'm playing a lot guitar now, and I just really want to spend some time playing music, and I play instruments and get in doing music, and it's something that I really like as I would like to have some time for myself, because as you said, 3 decades, so much time competing, so much time dedicating to the competition, and I feel like I need to do something for myself that I really, really like. And yeah, maybe after the Olympics I take a short break just to do something that I enjoy, and maybe come back with another campaign or come back with more competition, because I'm sure I cannot live away from the competition. So actually I'm a bit terrified about the day that I'm going to stop competing. That's going to be tough.
Retirement, I think, for any athlete can cause some level of identity crisis, but it is so true that striking a balance between what you do, what you love, and your personal time is so, so, so important. Also, just for longevity, if you want to keep going, you have to be able to give yourself that balance.
Exactly.
Now, you've been an incredibly inspirational person to anyone, but particularly to young girls. I mean, what you've achieved just in your young 30 years is so incredible. What advice would you give for future athletes and future kite surfers?
I think the most important thing for someone that wants to be a professional athlete or kite surfer is to really enjoy what they do. That's what's been giving me the gasoline, I would say, for all those 30 years. If it was a different sport that I didn't like, or it was something I didn't like, for sure I wouldn't have stayed over 20 years competing. You need to find the passion. You need to find something you really truly love, I would say. It sounds very cliche, but it's true. I mean, you need to wake up in the morning and be motivated. And the first thing I do in the morning is I open the window and I see, oh, it's windy. Awesome. I'm going to go on the water and it's super windy. You know, so that excitement, you need to have it every day. So you need to find something you love.
Find something you love and you'll never work a day. Mm-hmm. That's what they say.
Exactly. Awesome. That quote is the best.
So we come to our last question, which is one that I ask to all of the guests that come onto the podcast. This is, of course, The Edge podcast. And therefore, I have to ask you, Gisela, what does The Edge mean to you?
The Edge. I think I talked about it before, that the fine line, you know, like, for me, that's the edge of, like, qualifying or not qualifying the country, winning a world title or not winning it. You're always in the edge, you know, because you're getting out of the comfort zone and you're like, there's this line and you could succeed or fail. And there's always such a thin line for me, and the details made a difference. So yeah, I like being on the edge. it's a good part to be.
That's a very good way to visualize what the edge might mean. So thank you for your rendition or your version of what the edge means to you. It makes a lot of sense, and I think it's something that anyone can relate to. But most of all, thank you so much for your time today. It was lovely to speak to you. We wish you all the best of luck in the weeks to come. Have some fun out there and go live life on the edge.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Thanks a lot for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Edge. If you'd like to listen to more episodes like this one, then check out our interviews with athletes Summer McIntosh, Fred Curley, and Sydney McLaughlin. If you enjoyed this episode, then please don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. It really does make the difference. Another big thank you to Gisella for joining us on this episode. I'm your host, Naomi Schiff, and I'll be back next month with another episode of The Edge, a podcast by Tag Heuer. See you soon.